FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's December 20th, 2017. 11 more days left till tax reform kicks in. Hey, as always, email us, kl@kerrylutz.com, kl@kerrylutz.com, Twitter feed @KerryLutz. We answer all. Be part of the show. So, tax reform's kicking in. For some, it's a mixed bag. For others, it's a major score. And for still others, it's, well, which is it going to be? Well, Jordan Goodman's with us now. And to opine on it, Jordan, welcome back.
Great to be with you again, Kerry. It is a mixed bag, and there's going to be big winners and big losers based on this tax reform. And it's intentional. I mean, they really were trying to stick it to the high tax states with big property taxes, and they're going to get it. So New York, New Jersey, California, Michigan,
Connecticut,
places with big taxes are going to get hit.
Minnesota has a 9.85% state tax rate on the highest earners. You've got many states. Actually, a state like Illinois is not as bad as a state like New York, where it goes up to like 9% on the, if you're making over $1 million. And then if you're in New York City, God forbid, you get another 5.5% tacked onto there. But look, yeah, sure, Congress wanted to stick it to the blue state people. But the other thing is, why, if I live in Florida and I don't have a state income tax, why should I subsidize your state income tax, high state
income
tax?
Just because you have been for many years. There's no reason for it, but it's just been the custom. And people have made economic decisions based on the existing tax code, which is you get a deduction for state income taxes and for property taxes as much as they are. That's now going to be limited to $10,000, the two combined, property tax and state income tax, maximum $10,000, which is going to mean that people are going to pay a lot more in taxes because they're going to lose both those deductions. And I think on the margin, some people will move from high tax states like New York, California, to low tax states like Florida and California and Texas, because some people just don't want to pay those taxes. I mean, the idea of the overall picture was you had to raise taxes from something to cut taxes on other places, like the corporate rate going down and like the pass-through, which is a big tax cut for LLCs and subchapter S corporations that are now going to have a much lower rate than they did before paying a personal income rate. So somebody's got to pay for somebody else getting big benefits here.
Yeah. And well, I don't know how many people are really going to move, but I think a lot of you out there, it pays to become a renter. And let me give you, for instance, here on a house that's worth $120,000 in no special place in Florida. And that's a low priced home, middle class, working class. Generally, your rent is going to be somewhere around 1% of the value of that home per month. In other words, $1,200. However, if you're renting a $600,000 or $700,000 home, your rental is going to be somewhere around 0.5% per month. So on higher end homes, you actually get a discount off of value of that home. Now we might very well see that trend reverse here, Jordan, and those higher end homes could go up in value or be more sought after as rental properties than they are currently.
I agree with you, because I think a lot of people are not going to want to own their own homes, or at least on the margin. I think people will make a decision if there's a place with high property taxes, never mind state income taxes, if only $10,000 is deductible, maybe it's going to make more sense to run that as a business and rent it out. I agree with you. It's going to change the real estate market in a major, major way. You've already seen that. Mortgage applications recently were down about 5% because people are unsure going into this whether they want to buy a home or not. So this is a major change in kind of the American dream. Everybody wants to own a home. I think a lot fewer people will do so, and particularly in the high tax states, fewer people. It's going to really reduce the values of homes in high tax states, and particularly where the property taxes are higher and the values of the homes are higher. Yes.
Yeah, but for Joe Sixpack making up to like $100,000 a year, the tax bill is a net positive.
Usually, the standard deduction is doubling from $12,000 to $24,000 for a family. 85 to 90% of Americans will no longer need to itemize at all, which is a good thing. It means it simplifies things. It also means that they don't care anymore about mortgage deductions, charitable contributions, medical expenses, student loan interests, all kinds of things they've been worried about in the past, they will not have to think about in the future, which in some ways is a good thing. I mean, it's basically the tax code should be kind of somewhat neutral and not trying to do social engineering. So that's going to be a big change for a lot of people. And those people who are worried about it, for example, charities are worried that people will not contribute as much if they don't get a tax deduction. So it's going to change behavior all over the place.
Oh, yeah. Unintended consequences. And like I don't know if they excluded law firms and accountants from the pass-throughs.
I think they did, because that's going to be a big game. Yeah. Is what is a pass-through? A subchapter S LLC. You can't like be an athlete, and then create your own, Jim Jones LLC is a
right.
Things like that. But this is what they call the guardrails. But there's a lot of very smart accountants who are going to try to figure out how to get around these things and create LLCs and subchapter S's all over the place.
Well, the obvious thing is if you have a law firm, the law firm itself won't be a pass-through, but you can create a practice management corporation to run that, which a lot of medical practices already use. And I think the practice management company isn't going to be excluded from the from those guardrails. I think it'll be within the guardrails. So
that's
every big law firm is going to have a practice management, big medical practices. They often already do. That's what enables them to go across state lines and build up the practice by acquiring other practices. But now it'll be de rigueur. You'll just set it up automatically. And but I think if you make less than 315, I don't jointly 315,000, I think the limitations don't apply. Do I have that right?
That's right.
So
it's going to be a big game. I mean, in theory, the purpose of this is to get small businesses growing, paying lower taxes, hiring people, expanding, doing new products and all that. And I think there'll be some of that to some extent. It will be an incentive. Whenever you raise the after-tax costs or the after-tax return on an investment, you're going to get more of it. So raised the after-tax return by lowering the taxes on these things. On those, as well as for corporations, if they're going to have a 21% rate instead of 35%, even if the effective rate was lower than 35, mm-hmm. they're going to invest more in things that are going to give them a higher return.
And we got the repatriation, not quite as favorable terms as was hoped, 15.5% for cash sitting overseas, 8% for assets. So I guess what most of them will do is buy assets and then repatriate the after-tax asset.
Exactly.
Right? So
it creates
what kind
incentives
of assets
to do strange things. But I mean, again, getting this money back into the U.S. instead of having it be stuck overseas, I've heard estimates of running between $2 and $4 trillion would be a good thing. But the big question overall, Kerry, is what are companies going to do with this extra profitability they're going to have from the repatriation and from the 21% capital rate? Basically, there's three things the companies can do. They can invest it back in the business, plants and equipment, hire people, R&D, make the business grow. They can buy back stock, and they can raise dividends and executive compensation. So some companies will do some will do others. But I think a lot of companies, if they don't see a major place to invest the money because they're not going to get a good return on it, or their markets are already saturated, whatever it may be, they're going to buy back stock and raise dividends, which is why the stock market has done so well, because they're anticipating shrinking capital bases and higher dividends and putting a higher price earnings ratio on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it's going to result in more investment. And look, if nothing else, formations of new businesses, of small businesses, have been on the skids throughout the entire Obama administration and the last couple of years of the Bush administration. That's going to turn this around for sure. We're going to see new business formations skyrocket. And look, if I'm a lawyer getting paid and working in Manhattan, getting paid $250,000 to $300,000 married, total family income of, 315, is it? It pays for me to become a freelance attorney, start my own firm, and then just rent myself out to the old firm.
Right.
And I'm an LLC. It's a pass-through because up to $315,000 of joint income, none of the limitations apply to the pass-throughs.
Correct.
Have that
so
right?
People will do those kind of games. But that could offset in the case of the New York City person, what they may, you know, deductions they're not going to get for state and local income taxes and any property taxes they pay. So this, the whole jumble is going to be incredible. How people are going to try to figure these things out and do better for them. I really hope it helps the economy. I think it will, to some extent, create more economic growth. I think it's been oversold as to how much economic growth it's going to create. I do not think it's going to so-called pay for itself. I mean, I think revenues will go up, but the benefits are going up. I mean, the expenses are going up, even
right.
It's not related to the tax bill. Like 10,000 people a day turn 65, and more people are getting on Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. So just the demographic boom is 75 million baby boom or something like that. That's kind of an inexorable gain in expenses for the government. That's where they spend the money, is the entitlements. So
that's
I think the deficit's going to keep going up.
Yeah, well, there's no serious effort underway to try to contain the deficit and to reduce spending. Although, hey, you got to give Trump credit. He got rid of 1,575 regulations this year. And all he's got to do is get rid of another 100,000 and we will have a booming economy psychologically.
It has helped. There's no question of getting rid of regulations. It has helped. Definitely. And business confidence and consumer confidence is at an all-time high. And people are willing to take risks and start new businesses and invest and all that. That's been very, very positive. There's no question about it. But again, whether it's going to be enough, they're talking about $1.5 trillion increase in the deficit over 10 years. I think it'll be more than that when you get down to it, between the rising expenses for entitlements and defense. While we're adding a lot in defense. And the other thing that's going to happen is interest rates are going to be rising. I mean, the Fed raised rates three times this year. They're talking about raising it three times more in 2018. That adds money, expense, to the Treasury, which pays interest. Right now, they've been paying zero for a long time on Treasury bills. You get that up to 1% instead of zero. That's a big dollar amount right there. So the deficit is going to keep going up.
Yeah, I think that's inevitable for sure. And so I want to talk to you about Fragrance X. If you're looking for a great gift for this Christmas, FragranceX.com is the place to go. It's really an amazing website. You can save on Dolce & Gabbana, Burberry, Calvin Klein, Hugo Boss, and hundreds of more different fragrances. And look, they're all authentic. They're all real. There's no counterfeit here. You get free shipping. You'll save up to 80% off brand name perfumes. And the best part of all, if you use the code LUTZ20, that's L-U-T-Z 20, the number 20, you will save an additional 20% off on your purchase. The perfect gift for the holidays for him and for her. They've got millions of happy customers. FragranceX.com is the best place to go to get the best deals on all of your favorite fragrances. So anyways, when you look at all this, you know, for the big corporations, their effective tax rate is 13%. That's the latest number that I read about it, Jordan. So for an Apple, other than the repatriation aspects of it, which I don't believe are as big as they say, because Apple doesn't have the money in Europe or in Asian banks. They open up an account in Citibank called Apple Ireland, and that's where the money's deposited. It's been repatriated already. The only thing is they've got a liability on their books for deferred taxes, and you know, they want to get rid of that. Is 15.5% tax rate enough to bring that money back?
If they need it. If they don't need it, they won't. So a company like Apple or other companies in industrial areas, I think one area that is going to help them is immediate expensing of capital improvements and capital expenditures of various types. I mean, something like Apple or building buildings or Caterpillar or something like that, that's going to help them. And that is going to be a spur to capital expenditures, which have been very, very low for a long time.
Hey, so let's talk about that, because you get to write off immediate CapEx expense 100% as it's made that year for at least the next 5 years. That's something that the government is clearly underestimating the value of. And whether it really helps the economy in the long run or not is another issue, because it probably could lead to malinvestment. Just today, it said in the journal, I think it was, Southwest Airlines, now that the tax bill is going to go through, is going to upgrade their fleet. They got 700 planes. They're going to go into replacement cycle and route expansion, because now it's like a dollar for dollar reduction in their taxes. So it makes a lot more sense. And I assume that on your reports to shareholders, you're going to actually depreciate the airplane over 10 or 12 years. So your expenses on your books for the shareholders are showing a tremendous profit while your cost of taxes is going way, way down, even if it wipes out your net income for tax purposes to overinvest in your physical plant, right?
It helps cash flow a lot.
Yeah.
To be able to get that. So that's going to be, I mean, that's a good example of improving capital expenditures, which of course helps Southwest Airlines with a more efficient fleet, but it also helps Boeing and the people building the planes as well. So it has a kind of ripple effect, which is going to be very, very positive. That's kind of one of the parts of this tax bill that people are not really paying enough attention to, but I think could have a major positive impact.
And major negative impact upon tax receipts. Because look, at the end of the year, if I can go buy a new Ford F-150, you know, tricked out for $65,000, and I can finance it, and then I can simply just write it off my taxes, deduct it, you know, from profitability. Again, I'm paying it back over 5 years, but I'm getting that tax jolt instantaneously, cash flow positive again. I mean, all of this, it's just going to have unintended consequences. We're going to have this CapEx boom that really might not be that good, because the boom can quickly turn into a bubble faster than anybody thinks.
It could, but we've needed it. We haven't had enough capital expenditures for the last few years, so maybe we're going the other direction. But
hey,
there's a lot of old equipment and particularly infrastructure of various types. If this could be a spur to fix up the roads and the bridges and all the things we know that are falling apart left and right, and new capital expenditures, that would be a good thing. So it's going to be, certainly the stock market is thinking this is a very positive thing, because it's been on a roll all year, and that's just our anticipation of what's happening. Now that it's actually happened, actually having it roll out in the real world will be a different experience than just anticipating it all the time.
Yeah, well, don't you find it fascinating? What should be a relatively simple thing, the Congress turns into this just mind-numbing exercise that you really need to have an IQ of Einstein.
That's
really
what Congress does.
Come to terms with it, to wrap your arms around it, and they don't even know what they've done.
No.
You know, this isn't even a case where you have to pass it to see what's in it. This is a case where you have to pass it, wait 3 years, and then you'll figure out what was in it, and by then it'll be too late.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, the part of it that upsets people is that the business tax cuts are permanent, but the individual ones expire at the end of 2025. So, and even before you get there, they start phasing out as well.
Yeah.
So the individuals may get a little bit of break up front, but over time, those breaks can disappear. But companies are going to have a runway to do this for a long time. Again, I hope that the companies invest that money, those extra profits, back into their people. I think it's a little oversold. The Republicans have been talking about the average worker getting a $4,000 a year wage increase. I just don't think it works that way. I don't think companies get a tax break and they say, oh, well, let's hand it out to the workers in a big wage increase. I just don't think it works.
Yeah, well, yeah. Obviously, there's going to be buybacks and mergers, M&A activity for sure.
Right.
But look, the big companies are not the ones that are growing. It's the smaller and medium-sized companies that are really growing, Jordan. So
That's anything. You
do to encourage entrepreneurship, which had been on the decline in the U.S. for the better part of a decade, has to be a net positive. So, once you're talking about things going up, bubbles and all other great things, did I hear a rumor that you sold your house and put it all into cryptocurrencies?
Yes. I just remember I got an additional mortgage to the maximum the bank would let me, and I put it all into Bitcoin. Yes. People are doing these things. This is the greatest craze in human history, I think. This is bigger than the tulip bulbs, Kerry. This really is. I mean, the Bitcoin alone, never mind the other cryptocurrencies, started the year at roughly 1,000. And now, depending on the day, it's 17,000, 18,000, 19,000. You know, it's up like 1,900% this year. And people are doing all kinds of wild and crazy, strange things to get in on this, right, without having any clue what they're doing whatsoever. It's kind of the ultimate definition of a bubble, I guess you might say.
Yeah, well, they're actually, if they're not taking out mortgages, they're actually taking out advances on their credit cards. Could you imagine borrowing like $20,000 on your card and buying 2 bitcoins with it.
I mean, sure.
Can you imagine if these people's spouses knew what they were doing?
Well, it worked well this year, and so it creates a following. And so the exchanges, like Coinbase and Bittrex, the two examples, have just been overwhelmed with customers. I hear that Coinbase is the most searched term on Google of anything right now.
Wow.
And people set up these accounts. If you want to get, I'll give you a specific stock to play this, actually, which is GBTC, which is the Bitcoin Investment Trust, traded on NASDAQ. So that's a kind of a pure way for people to play it without having to set up an account and do all these coins and tokens and things like that. Very volatile, but I think in the long run, I do not think cryptocurrency is going away. They play a role in transactions. McDonald's says they're going to start taking Bitcoin in 2018. You're seeing people buying homes in Bitcoin, all kinds of international transactions. It's the underlying technology is what's called the blockchain, which is a secure way of transferring information from one place to another. It's not only currencies, all kinds of things. And that is a very secure thing that people want to be using to making transfers. So, and it's big in the US, but it's even bigger in Asia. I mean, they are just crazy over this in China and Korea and Japan.
Especially. Japan is 40%. 40% of the trading's coming from Japan, if you could believe it.
Yeah. They have negative interest rates, you know, and they've got not much growth. So this is much more exciting for them. So it's a worldwide event. And there are other currencies. The two other big ones are Ethereum and Litecoin.
Right.
But there are other ones coming. Ripple is the next one coming, but there's going to be others. And Dash. There's a lot of fraudulent ones as well.
Yeah. Well, I call them kleptocurrencies.
That's right.
You know, there's serious kleptos running around and people are getting burned left and right. This reminds me not so much of tulip mania, but of the South Sea bubble, because that's where the term bubble came into existence. And fortunes would be made and lost daily by people selling stock shares just on the street, literally on the street, selling shares in what they called bubble companies, interestingly enough. And these are bubble currencies, even though they're not really currencies, let's face it. You know,
they're not currencies, but they are being used for some transactions. So it's not a complete, it's not only a speculative mania. There are some actual uses for these things, but mostly it's a speculative mania.
But look, if you are holding something that's going up in value 50% a month, which it's done the past 3 months in a row, are you going to spend it on anything? Are you going to use it to buy something? No, because the purchasing power could go up another 50% next month. So if you bought them, you're hoarding them. And I don't know who's selling them now. Probably people taking, intelligent people taking profits.
Yes. Right?
Because I always say, well, you know, the old Wall Street saw, you never go broke taking a profit, or you never lose money taking a profit. My advice is you're up 10, 20 times or more, sell half of it, because half of infinity is better than zero.
Right. And you're riding on the house at that point. You've gotten your original capital back and more. And then if it goes down, it doesn't hurt you that much, because at least you got your original principal out. So I would agree with that. Right. But this is going much higher. This is going to be the story of 2018, I think, the whole cryptocurrency. Now, we've had recently, futures have begun trading on Bitcoin in both the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the Chicago Board of Trade. That kind of legitimizes it to some extent and allows pension funds and hedge funds and banks to kind of play it both on the long and the short side.
Well,
so there are going to be more signs like that of what I would call legitimization of Bitcoin. I think Ethereum may have a futures contract on it as well. So this is going to be the story of 2018, how this all plays out.
Hey, let me ask you a dumb question. If you're a futures trader and you see that Bitcoin could go up 10, 15% in a day, are you going to go to sleep at night with an open position?
Probably not. I mean, and the margin is extremely high on these things. I think it's how like 45%.
Yeah.
45% margin, something like that. Normally it's 5%. Yes.
It's huge, as the man said. The spreads are like nothing we've ever seen, which is probably why they got into it. And the spreads have to be, because the volatility, even if you're buying a spread, which is when you sell one contract short and buy another one long, it could be in different months, different terms, whatever. But simplifying it, even if you're buying the spread, the volatility is like, who is selling you the call contract? Who is not the call, the who's selling you the futures contract, right? Yeah. Who is going to go risk that? Somebody else who's got a spread, right?
Right. I mean, if you're on the, in effect, short Bitcoin in a futures market and it goes way up, you could lose your shirt very quickly.
You know? Yeah. So. You could be bankrupt in the morning because don't forget, sure. The cryptocurrency markets trade 24/7. The futures markets trade according to Chicago hours. So whatever that is, 9:30 to 3:30 or 1:30?
Something like that. But yeah, the markets keep trading after that. That's correct.
Yeah, this is madness here. And it's not going to end well. It never does. But it'll be a lot of fun until it does end. That's the key to bubbles. Enjoy the bubble. Enjoy the ride up on your bubble because... the ride down.
And get your principal out. At least double your principal out and then have fun riding on the house.
Yes. Yeah, that's the only way I ever made money in stocks too, was selling them after significant appreciation, not waiting. Like Bernard Baruch said, I got rich letting the other guy make the last 10%.
Exactly.
Right?
And we've had this. We had the dot-com bubble in 1999, 2000. We had the real estate bubble in 2007, 2008. Now we're having the Bitcoin bubble. People never learn. They just always think this time I'll get out in time. And usually they don't.
Yeah. And, you know, it's all about, like, I'm writing an article, you'll see it shortly, called The Bitcoin Bubbles Over. It's all about the dopamine. And people need that hit of dopamine. And it's better than gambling. Well, it is gambling, but better than doing drugs or alcohol or whatever else you need to do to get the dopamine hit. Yeah, maybe it's not so bad with cryptos, as long as you don't get crazed, go overboard.
Which people will. This is still the beginning of this. This is some person said that this is the equivalent of email in 1994, and it just kind of coming out of its hobbyist phase. It's like, what is this thing with an at sign? You know, what? How do you send this thing?
And then it
took over the world, right?
I could get email immediately. This is amazing. Talking about Coinbase, Charles Schwab. Do you know how long it took Charles Schwab to hit 10 million accounts?
Probably quite a few years.
I think 30 years. Do you know how long it took Coinbase to hit?
Like a month or something?
No, 13 million accounts in the past year. 13 million. So more people have opened Coinbase, and I don't want to disparage them in any way, but they're the most connected to the U.S. government. They're reporting everything to the government. So make sure all your taxes are in order. Anyway, Jordan, we got to run. What's the best place to find you and hear your
show? My website is moneyanswers.com. I get emails from you folks all the time. I'm always glad to help them on all aspects of personal finance at moneyanswers.com.
All right. And hey, be part of the show. Send Jordan myself an email, KL@KerryLutz.com. Don't forget the Twitter feed. It's heating up at Kerry Lutz. The Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. Jordan, hey, happy, healthy new year to you and yours. And we'll talk to you in 2018, where maybe the Bitcoin bubble will go to infinity.
Very good. Sounds good. Thanks so much, Kerry.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.